Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. You know, this weekend, more than 100 naturalists and citizen scientists will gather at the Eldo Leopold Foundation property in Baraboo to engage in what's called a bio blitz. And we're going to be talking about it today with a couple of people. Back with us, Buddy Hoffaker is the executive director and board president of the Eldo Leopold Foundation. Buddy, good to have you back.
Oh, always good to be with you, Larry.
With us as well, Julia Colby. Julia is manager of the vertebrate and invertebrate collection at the Milwaukee Public Museum, which organizes the event. And Julia, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Just to mention, at 12:30, we're going to be talking about a series of events highlighting the resilience of organic crops. We'll talk with Aaron Silva, program leader for the Organic Grain Resource and Information Network, hosting those events. But first, have you participated in a bio blitz? You know what it is. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Julia, this weekend is the 10th annual BioBlitz organized by the Milwaukee Public Museum. What's a BioBlitz?
It's an event that's sort of hard to describe, but in a nutshell, you get a bunch of naturalists and citizen scientists and members of the public in a park or a natural area, and they survey for 24 hours. So they're out there looking at anything they can put a name on, if it's a plant, an animal. We have somebody doing algae, fungi, and we count all those things up. And at the end of that 24 hours, we announce what we found in this snapshot in time. And then that list gets provided to the host site so that they know maybe a little bit more about what they have. And then on the Saturday portion, there is activities for the public. So if you don't necessarily want to go out there and, you know your fungi, maybe you could learn them.
What's the history of the, it's been going for 10 years, and I think it's been held in other places as well.
Yeah, so we have been doing them. MPM has been organizing them for 10 years. The history of the BioBlitz goes back, I think, 26 years, where the first one was put on from a museum to have a general, you know, sort of festival and connect people with the nature in their area. And that's sort of the overarching goal of a BioBlitz.
It's interesting. I know there have been Canada was trying for a countrywide BioBlitz, which was really interesting to me. Buddy, this is here's this event coming up this weekend. It's going to take place at the Foundation property in Baraboo. What does it mean to host this event?
Well, we're so excited to host the BioBlitz and for it to be the 10th anniversary of the event that Milwaukee Public Museum has organized is extra special. You know, it was 90 years ago that the Leopold family bought their farm and started restoring it back to health and reintroducing species that would have been there prior to European settlement. And so we know quite a bit about what has been done there and what's living on the property, all the wild things. And yet we're not specialists in butterflies or moss or invertebrates. And so Julia and the team of expertise that she mobilizes is just really thrilling to get a deeper insight into all the living things that we share this space with and that we're helping to care for and give habitat for.
Yeah, I'm wondering, how are you going to use those data? But Probably a lot of ways.
I mean, you know, Leopold, we got to get a Leopold quote in there. The first law of intelligent tinkering is to keep all the cogs and wheels. And so just knowing what's out there is important because as we make habitat management decisions, you know, invariably they help some and hurt other species. And so trying to understand what we can do to improve the quality of the habitat for those species that are struggling elsewhere or that are rare and threatened is really important. So, again, having this bigger snapshot of what it is that we can take care of, do a better job taking care of, is really important for an organization that does active management.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Julia, so how does it work? Do people use, what do they use? I mean, they're running around in the night even. Is there an app or how does it work?
Yeah, so folks survey in a variety of different ways. They'll bring whatever field equipment is appropriate for them. And as you say, sometimes they're out there at 2 or 3 in the morning. And then that material, they either identify sort of on the fly when they're out in the field, or they may bring it back to base camp to ID. Sometimes they give us a paper list of what they found. We're also using an app called iNaturalist, which allows you to record photos and other information about anything you see. You could use this anywhere. And then that you can suggest an ID, or sometimes members of, you know, the larger naturalist community who may not be even at the event will say, oh, that looks interesting, and suggest an ID for you, or they will know what it is.
If I might just jump in here, Larry, I think one of the fun parts about these kind of gatherings, too, is not only the wild things, but these wild naturalists that are out there. Some of these are professionals that really know more about a species or a guild of species than anybody else in the world, and others are volunteers that this is just their side passion and their hobby that they want to understand the world and help introduce it to others. So it's part of the fun part is also just interacting with all these specialists that are there, sharing their own commitment to conservation and then sharing their knowledge with the general public.
And I imagine there are some sort of there have to be some identification tools that get used as well.
Yeah, so we bring field guides for scientists to use, because obviously we have a fairly large library at the museum. People bring their own field guides, their own microscopes, and then having that sort of backbone that iNaturalist provides, where somebody might be, you know, going to look at fly data from California, and or they're in California and they see these new observations pop up and they say, oh, that's that, that's that, that's that. And so that's very helpful, too.
It's interesting to me that I'm trying to envision. Now, there's not people aren't out there 24 straight hours.
Some of them are.
Oh.
Some people, you know, they might sneak off and have a nap for a little while. But there's definitely years where there's some wild person out there and they are just up for the 24 hours out there surveying.
It's hard for me to imagine being out there for 24 hours.
Well, when you
Buddy,
love something.
Are you going to be out there for 24
hours?
Well,
I'm pretty sure I'll sneak a nap in here or there. I'm not very good after 4 hours. So, and then just also want to make sure we share that not only do you have the chance to rub elbows with these people who know more about wild things than most of us, but that we have some structured events and activities that people can come out and participate in, a moss walk, a mycology walk, a butterfly hike, so you can get out and build your own knowledge about the wild things that you share this planet with as well.
And will that be going concurrently with the rest of it?
Correct. Julia has kind of structured the schedule. Maybe you want to describe a little bit more what's going on and how things lay against one another.
Yeah, so on Saturday is when all the sort of public-facing events happen, and that's between 10 and 3, and it's really just sort of drop in as you want. The schedule is available on the MPM website, but the programming starts at 10, and then at 3, as I said, we announce the totals of everything that we found, and in between you can take these walks. Self-guided tours of the Leopold Shack will be available. You can wander through base camp and chat with the scientists and learn about what they're doing or how they're doing it, or show them a picture of something you found and be part of the Blitz.
It sounds like a whole lot of people running around.
Structured chaos.
A great way of describing it, yes.
It's hard for me to imagine all that happening at the same time. And I'm looking here for a piece of information that I lost that I was going to bring up, and I'll find it. I promise I'll find it. We're talking today with Buddy Huffaker, executive director and board president for the Aldo Leopold Foundation based in Baraboo. And Julia Colby is the manager of the vertebrate and invertebrate collection at the Milwaukee Public Museum about this BioBlitz and BioBlitzes. And certainly we're inviting you to join in. Julia, you could talk a little bit about how the public museum got involved in this in the first place and what's the background of it. And you know what? I think we're going to save that. But think about that, and we'll come back to that after we take a look at the news. We find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Thanks for joining in today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. This coming weekend, scientists and interested citizens will have 24 hours to identify every plant and animal species in the Aldo Leopold Foundation property in Baraboo, which I think is for about 4,000 acres. And we're talking about that event and some other things as well with our two guests, Buddy Huffaker, executive director and board president for the Aldo Leopold Foundation, and Julia Colby, manager of the vertebrate and invertebrate collection at the Milwaukee Public Museum, which organizes the event. And they're here until 12:30 to answer your questions, and then we'll talk with Aaron Silva, program leader for Organic Grain Resource and Information Network, about a series of upcoming events about organic farming. Questions for our guests for now. Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address talk@wpr.org. Julia, when we broke for news, we were talking a little bit about the Milwaukee Public Museum. What's the background on this? And talk about the museum a bit.
Yeah, so as we talked about earlier, the first BioBlitz was about 26 years ago, and that was in D.C. And our president and CEO helped organize that when she was at a different institution. And 10 years ago, we were looking for some outreach opportunities that would involve all parts of the museum and would allow us to connect both to scientists in the community, connect them to each other, and connect to the public. And a BioBlitz was sort of the natural thing for us to do. And we have, you know, we've done one every year since, except for 2020. And it just, every year it grows and grows, and we meet new folks, and we get new audiences to come in. And it's just a really fun event.
Yeah, I was thinking on June 7th, the UW-Madison Lakeshore Nature Preserve held a BioBlitz to study the biodiversity of a 300-acre natural area on campus. How do you feel seeing similar events held in other places?
I love it. I think that this is a great way to sort of, again, mobilize all of those scientists who, most of them got into this because they love going out there and poking around at stuff and putting names on things and learning about the world that surrounds them. And so when you say, hey, if you want to come do this, I'll give you, you know, we've got food. They're like, okay, sign me up. And so I love seeing this event happen in other places because it's just such a great way to connect people.
As you think about the past and the events you've been involved in, can you think of some striking findings or just interesting findings that have happened that maybe people weren't aware, you know, were going to happen?
Yeah. I mean, every year we find something that's significant in some way. So maybe the property didn't know that it was there in a good way or a bad way. We found things like, you know, sort of special plants, state endangered plants or whatever that the property had no idea that they had. We found things like invasive species that the property didn't know that they had. And that helps them manage that situation either by encouraging that habitat or by helping to remediate that invasive species. We find new state records all the time. We find, again, state endangered threatened species, sometimes federally endangered species, or federally listed species, I should say. And so every year we find something new. And I would say, depending on the size of the property, we can expect to see 1,000 or more species at an event like this.
Wow.
In 24 hours. And that is, again, it's a very narrow snapshot in time. So surely there is more than 1,000 things out there, but that is what we see in that 24-hour period.
Hmm. Someone else is wondering, is this a competitive event in any way?
It does sometimes get competitive in a very collegial way. The plant folks, the botanists, and the insect people have this long-going war about who's going to put up the most species every year. Who's going to... It's mostly about the species number for them, but it is, in a very, very fun way, competitive, yeah.
Julie, the Leopold Foundation can offer a little incentive to, you know, we'll put up a prize for whatever group comes up with the most number of species.
They will take you up on it, I promise.
Oh, man. So, well, buddy, how many species, plant and animal species, do you think you're going to find at Eldo Leopold?
Well, I think Julie is probably right. It will be thousands or over 1,000. And, you know, kind of to share some of what we know is we know we have about 100 breeding birds species using the property and 300 plus species of plants that we've identified and know. But beyond that and other individuals that would be even in those guilds of species that we're unaware of, we're just really excited to kind of have our eyes opened and new reveals happen. And of course, we're hoping a little bit more on the fun side than on the problem invasive species side. But as Julia said, knowledge is power, and understanding what's out there and how we can best help the land be as healthy as possible is really important to us.
And I expect that, your own survey work is probably limited compared to what you're going to find of this biodiversity.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we've invested a little bit in having some knowledge and expertise on staff around plants and birds, primarily grassland birds, because those are the species that we feel our habitat can help the best. But on the invertebrates and in the pollinator realm, that's really just knowledge we don't have on our team. And so, again, to Julia's point, knowing what's out there and kind of where they are can really help us continue to build our own knowledge and then ensure that the habitat is as healthy as possible.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Maybe you can talk a little bit more about the foundation itself and the property itself for those who aren't familiar with it. You got a lot of acreage there.
Yeah, so, again, I mentioned at the beginning of the program that 90 years ago, the Leopold family purchased this little farm outside of Baraboo, Wisconsin, on the Wisconsin River, and they began, it was a worn-out farm, they began to restore it to health. And then that became kind of the inspiration for Leopold's seminal work, now a Sand County Almanac, which I'm guessing a lot of your listeners have heard of, but it's become one of the cornerstone pieces of literature in the environmental conservation movement, been translated into 15 different languages. And so we still own and manage the farm that is a National Historic Landmark now. And then we also are the executor of Leopold's Literary Estate. So we help bring the book out in new packages and new language and new formats, make sure his idea of a land ethic, which he articulated in that book, remains vital and relevant. And that is basically that we're all in this together. We're all part of the land community. And for people to be healthy, the land has to be healthy. And then as a way to continue the family's commitment to ecological restoration and management, we've partnered with neighboring landowners, primarily the Pines family that owns a significant amount of land adjacent to us. And so now we help take care of this 4,000 acres of contiguous land on both sides of the Wisconsin River to kind of manage for our targets, our grassland birds, bees, and monarch butterflies specifically. So again, those are the ones that kind of we know most about, but looking to have our eyes open about what else is out there.
Yeah. Well, and the property is amazingly diverse.
It is. You know, we sit in this kind of part of Wisconsin where you have a lot of natural divisions that kind of collided, literally and figuratively, mm-hmm. with where the glacier, the last extent of the last glaciation, and then where the Wisconsin River came through, and Glacial Lake, Wisconsin was drained. You have the Baraboo Hills and the Quartzsite Mountain Range not far from us. And so Sauk County is kind of, which is the county that the farm is in, holds 50% of all the state's plant and animal species. So we sit in this kind of hot spot for biodiversity. And again, that's why we know it's a diverse area, but better understanding exactly what that diversity is and knowing what's there that we're stewards of is really important.
Yeah, I would think. And Julia, how did the selection process go for this anyway? I'm wondering how you landed on, I can see why you'd want to land on the Leopold Center, but talk about that.
Yeah, so we select sites in a variety of ways. Often the site approaches us and says, hey, we're really interested. And so we'll have a meeting to make sure that everybody's, you know, goals and expectations line up. But we are interested in sites that are super diverse and like Alder Leopold, somewhat rural. But we're also interested in sites that are, you know, urban parks. We did Grant Park a couple years ago, a couple parks in Waukesha, because you can find, you know, nature is everywhere. It's not just in some far-flung area or some rainforest halfway across the globe. Like, diversity is in your own backyard, and it just helps us sort of drive that message home, I think.
Yeah. I was thinking about Milwaukee. I mean, it in and of itself, the amount of parkland and natural areas. I mean, you think about Milwaukee, most people, I think, maybe they think about the Brewers or maybe they think about the downtown area. But you have a lot there that you can that you could study.
Yeah, there's a lot of parkland. A lot of it has had pretty extensive restoration or ecological work done on it. And this not only helps highlight work like that, like they at Leopold, you know, there's a lot of prairie restoration. And so we can talk about that. But it also helps sort of evaluate how those things have done and are doing, depending on what we find in various places. At Leopold, one of the things I'm personally very excited about is there's prairies that we know are 90 years old restoration, so restored prairie places. And then there's some that are, a year or two old at
Correct.
This point?
Yeah.
And
brand new.
What's the difference between those? What are we going to find? Are we going to, you know, are we going to find really rare stuff in both? Are we just going to find it in one? So that's a really exciting way that we can gather data.
So it gets pinpointed then, any finding?
Yes.
As to location?
Yeah, so we are doing a lot. We're trying to be very careful about that this year because there are these distinctly different restoration zones on the property. So scientists will hand us the list that says, oh, I was in zone 1 or zone 5 when I found this. If they're using the program iNaturalist, that auto adds GPS, and so then they can map it out that way.
Oh, that's nice.
And so these zones, you know, will help us track where these different species were located and identified. But also for us, we know, well, where did we burn last year or how long? It's been 5 years since this zone was burned. And so that's the other thing that informs our management moving forward is not only just what's there, maybe because of how old or diverse the habitat is, but also the historic management that has occurred on that zone.
I think that's pretty interesting because you do have sort of time zones. I was thinking, it'd be fun to be able to go back to an area, Julia, at some point and say, okay, we're going to do this again here. And what are the differences? And in the case of the foundation, you have sort of time differences in terms of the property itself.
Yeah. So in terms of like when it was last burned is a big one, or when it was restored. And in 10 years, it would be fascinating to go back to those very recent prairies and see what they're doing.
And that, again, we'll have this now rich data set. And so where we find interesting insights or questions, you know, whether we'll be able to recruit Julia and NPM to come back to do a full BioBlitz, don't know. But we could engage scientists and specialists to kind of look a little further and deeper into one area or species and why was there or not there based on all this contextual information.
I'm thinking you could target then, too, if there's something you find that you didn't know was there.
Right.
And you want it to be there, and maybe more of it to be there.
Correct.
Yeah. You can target it that way. Somebody else is wondering how can members of the public get involved in the BioBlitz this weekend, or can they? You know, I think they can show up.
Yeah. So definitely 10 to 3, we will be there. And if you are an iNaturalist user, anybody can join the expedition. We'll have QR codes on site. And as long as you're within the bounds of, you know, the survey area that we've set up before 3 o'clock, start snapping away.
That's pretty cool. So there can be some overlap from the sound of it in terms of what gets sighted.
Yes. Yeah. So we definitely have to, there's a step there where at like 2:30, we are frantically going through everybody's lists and, okay, so-and-so saw this, and so-and-so also saw this, so make sure it's recorded once and not twice. And then we do go back and data check the list after because it's a little chaotic at the end. But yeah, there's definitely overlap where multiple lists will come in with the same thing, but then you always find that one unique thing on the list, and nobody else saw it.
Have you? And does that happen pretty often?
Oh, yeah. Like, they will come in, you know, oh, I just saw whatever. And then everybody else goes out to look for it, and maybe they get lucky, maybe they don't. But sometimes you just have to be in the right place at the right time.
Is there a little hooping and hollering going on?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that. Oh, man. By the way, I did want to mention, and I was should have mentioned this earlier, but I couldn't find my notes on it. But there is, on a different topic here, tomorrow we have a one-day member drive ourselves, and I did want to point that out. It's a one-day drive, and it works when we get an early start. Works best. So as you're listening in today, you can help us meet the goal of 1,200 donations. We're moving along. We haven't made it yet, but we need to make 1,200 donations by the 26th of June. So when you give a donation now, WPR programs will receive an extra $12,000 from a group of generous members. So you can join in now with your gift at WPR.org/donate. That really, really help us out. Go to WPR.org/donate and make a contribution now. And that's going to help us out here at WPR. Love that. I'm wondering about the costs of all. Let's go back to the event. Is it an expensive thing to put on, Julia?
Yeah, there's definitely costs associated. We have to get a tent. We have to get all of our staff out there. We're feeding people. There's T-shirts and all these consumables. It's supported by very generous donors. This year we have the Antonia Foundation. PPG is donating. And then David and Marguerite Harvey have been longtime supporters of this event. And so that allows us to put this on for free, to provide programming for free. And then, you know, if there's things that the site needs subsidized, like parking or whatever, we can do that as well.
Yeah. And Buddy, on your end, what about it?
No particular special investment, kind of just part of our ongoing operations. So our staff team that is supporting the scientists getting out to the field and kind of helping refine where they're at. But it's just a great opportunity for us to get new knowledge, but also new faces out to the Leopold Center that have never been there but are motivated to come out to participate or to learn about what's being found. And I just put a quick plug in for all your listeners to support the Leopold Foundation, Milwaukee Public Museum, and Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, our communities are not strong and resilient without your support. And this is a great kind of triangulation of interest and expertise right here on the radio right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine even the experts, they're probably doing this on their own time, a lot of them.
Yeah, they, this is sometimes it's work for them, but often it's, they're coming on a day off and they... We have the advantage, as I said earlier, that they love doing this stuff, and we give them a chance to, really.
Yeah, and I want to give you guys a chance to talk a little bit more about some other things, too, that, I mean, the foundation always has a lot going on, but you talk about some of the things that are coming up that people might also be interested in.
Well, obviously, if you can't join us this weekend, you can still come out pretty much any day through the end of October to see the historic Leopold Shack and Farm, visit the Leopold Center. We also have virtual programming called Land Ethic Live that's once a month. Next month, our guest is Dick Cates. Many people in southern Wisconsin will know him. He and his family have written a book about their journey to implement the land ethic on their farm from a sustainable agriculture perspective. And then a really fun time to come visit us is in November when we have our crane tours and co-host Crane Fest with the International Crane Foundation. So, you know, one of Wisconsin's conservation success stories is that when the Leopolds purchased their farm in the 30s, there was only about 100 cranes in all of Wisconsin. And now our flyway has about 100,000. And we have about 15,000 of them come to roost every night right behind the shack in the Wisconsin River. And so it's just a great wildlife spectacle. So this weekend we will find some really small things that you can only see under a microscope. But anybody can come out and see sandhill cranes land right in front of them in November.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be a very quiet event.
Talk about hooping and hollering.
Oh, man. Julia, what about the museum?
So in addition to the BioBlitz in Baraboo, because Baraboo is a distance from the museum, we are doing BioBlitz-related programming at the museum with our educators on site, and that's on Saturday. And then upcoming, we have the Dinosaur Days of Summer next month, which is July 7th to the 25th. So that's 3 weeks of all the dinosaur programming that you could ever want, I think. Should be very good. And then we have ongoing things like member appreciation, special events, tours like Secrets of the Museum that are included with admission.
I haven't visited the museum in a couple of years, so I got to get back over there.
Yeah, now's the time. We are gearing up for this move. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, I tell you what, it's been a pleasure talking with both of you today. And so what's the time, just as we conclude here, when should people come out this weekend, buddy?
Saturday from 10 to 3. And, again, there's a schedule, full schedule on the Milwaukee Public Museum website if you want to take a hike or a workshop. But 10 to 3 is open to the public.
And it's this is a free event.
Free.
Yep.
Yeah.
Come learn. Come listen. Learn.
The price. Laugh. The price is right.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Well, I tell you what. I know it's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you both very much for taking time to talk with us about it. Appreciate it. And we'll have a chance to do it again. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Buddy Hoffecker is Executive Director and Board President for the Aldo Leopold Foundation based in Baraboo. And Julia Colby is the Manager of the Vertebrate and Invertebrate Collection at the Milwaukee Public Museum. That's going to be a great event. And if you're looking for something to do this weekend and... I know just the place you can go. We've just been talking about it for the last 45 minutes. Coming up, we're going to take a look at organic farming some events that are going to be of interest to a lot of folks who are interested in organic farming. That next. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.